from KQED.
Well, any list of California's most notorious criminals would surely include Charles Manson. He and his cult followers were convicted of orchestrating the Tate-LaBianca murders, which took place in Los Angeles in 1969. The most famous victim was Sharon Tate, the pregnant wife of Hollywood director Roman Polanski. But more than 40 years later, it is Manson whose name is best remembered. In his new book titled Manson, The Life and Times of Charles Manson, writer Jeff Gwynn follows Manson's tracks through Berkeley and San Francisco down to Los Angeles, describing how his obsession with the Beatles and landing his own recording contract led to the notorious murders that shook Hollywood more than 40 years ago. And Jeff Gwynn joins me now. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Charles Manson was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, 1934. What kind of a childhood and home life did he have?
Part of the Manson mystique has always been that he was a child of the streets, the illegitimate son of a teenage prostitute who tried to sell him for a pitcher of beer. None of that really is true. His mother did serve a short prison sentence for a botched armed robbery, but he lived with relatives comfortably in West Virginia in a small town. And by the time he got here to San Francisco, he had a long record of violent juvenile delinquency. Then as an adult, everything from car theft to being a very unsuccessful pimp in Los Angeles.
And as you say, he gets here after getting paroled from prison in Los Angeles, arrives in San Francisco in just before the Summer of Love, 1967. And while he was in prison, you write that among the things that influenced him were Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and then also Scientology.
He was entranced by the Dale Carnegie course he got to take in prison because he thought it would make him a better pimp. He could get more women to cooperate. He liked Scientology because he was fascinated with how they could talk to people and try to recruit them. But then he heard the Beatles, and he knew what his dream was. He was going to be a bigger star than they were. When he was released from prison, Terminal Island, down in Los Angeles, came up to Berkeley because he knew somebody here. But the Summer of Love, Haight Ashbury, it was just too much for him. He was looking for gullible followers, and where better could you find him?
He goes down to Los Angeles in a converted school bus.
Yep.
That was painted rainbow colors and black and had Hollywood Productions written on the side of it. And he wanted to get a music contract. And in fact, he became friendly with some of the Beach Boys.
Dennis Wilson, specifically. The other Beach Boys loathed Manson. Manson glommed onto Dennis Wilson, gave him all the girls and drugs that Dennis wanted, which was a considerable amount. And Dennis, who was a very friendly, helpful guy, did what he could to get Manson signed to the Beach Boys Brothers label, but the other Beach Boys wanted no part of him. But Manson also befriended other famous stars, Neil Young, John Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas. He had plenty of chances to audition his music for some of the great talents, and none of them found him anything more than mediocre.
The night of those first murders in Hollywood, the Sharon Tate murders, he wasn't there. He didn't really kill anybody, but he orchestrated it and he ordered it. And as you point out, he manipulated everyone into thinking it was their idea and made sure that they all had, so to speak, blood on their hands, that they participated.
Very much so. That's the way Manson always controlled his followers, by using the Carnegie precept, let the other fellow think that the idea is his. The reason they picked that house was not because they intended to kill Sharon Tate specifically or Terry Melcher, the record producer who'd lived there before her. It was simply because Tex Watson, who was driving the car, knew how to get there from Spahn Ranch because he and Manson had driven there once or twice previously. We now know that after the murders were committed, Manson himself went back to the house because he didn't think they'd made the scene sufficiently shocking enough and move some things around, stage manage it, so to speak.
I think there's a popular perception that Charles Manson is crazy. And in fact, he used to play something of something he called the insane game
right,
from the time he was very young. Describe that. What was it and how did it develop as he got older?
Charles Manson is a very small, slight man. As a full-grown adult, he was only 5'4". When his mother, not because she didn't want him, but because he was so violent and incorrigible, put him in the first of a series of boys' homes. He'd act worse and worse until finally he ended up in some really bad facilities where he would be preyed on as a small boy. That was when he told people he started playing the insane game, acting so crazy, like such a lunatic, that the bad kids would leave him alone. And I think the most telling story was told to me by both Leslie Van Houten and Patricia Krenwinkel, that just before the final arrest in Mojave, Manson called the family around him and said, "If I'm ever arrested again, I'm going to play Crazy Charlie. I'll do it as long as it takes till they decide I'm insane and let me go." And Krenwinkel, Van Houten, those who know him since, say he's been doing that since 1969.
The book is called Manson, The Life and Times of Charles Manson. Writer Jeff Gwynn, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
And you can read an excerpt of Jeff Gwynn's book at californiareport.org.